97 FM and W260 CL Coco 99.9 FM.
Hello, space and treasure coast. This is Sita Biggie on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in Cocoa, Florida. I'm not going to say it's sunny because it's cold. It's dreary a little bit.
It's a blue sky.
Yeah. We still have a blue sky. That's correct.
So we've just committed now. We're Floridians.
Yeah. That's right. Yes. So we are here in our studio on AM 1510 WWBC. We're on FM 94.7. 99.9, 100.7, and we are heard all over the planet. As long as somebody can connect to the internet, they can listen to our show.
That's right, all over the World Wide Web on 1510 WWBC. You can hear our show live. All you have to do is hit that Listen Live button on any one of your listening devices. Or if you're catching an archive of the show, you can also find them there by the date. Also on our Facebook page, Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And, of course, on our website, SitaMediaInc.com. And we have, and again, 14 years on the show. Sita, congratulations. I can't believe it. But we have people listening all over the world, from Ireland and all over the world. I mean, Ireland is one that pops in my head right away because I'm thinking of someone that just put out a book that our friend of ours.
Yeah, yeah.
And because it's a book day.
Yes.
Sort of a book day.
Well, you know what? We've had some really great shows this past year. We've had a lot of people that came in studio and made an impact on our lives, and we've had a lot of people that called in. Our show has become a place for authors. We have become like Author Central for people who want to advertise their book, their product, their writing, whatever
we'll
they're
talk
writing.
About the inspiration behind their writing as
right.
well.
Right. And so it's nice to have to kind of move away from a lot of other topics, but move into the area where people can make a difference with their life experience, because everybody knows in order to write a book, to become an author, you had to have a story. And we've had stories about the Holocaust. We've had stories about domestic violence. We've had stories about colorism. We've had people calling to talk about weaving baskets. We had people calling that talked about immigration and why they came to the United States. And
all kinds of activism going on across the United States, which is so impressive to me as well as inspiring, because there's still a lot of people that care, which is, you know, sometimes when you look at the news, you think that maybe, you know, maybe the faith of human nature needs to be injected a little bit. But we find these folks every day that are injecting their love and talents into our society and making things better.
Well, that's what life is all about, right? So today is no different. So I'm always on social media myself. I can't say that I'm one of those people that's not on social media, because in order to make our show work, I have to be on social media, and I have to make sure that we have our shows commit. We have people that are committed to call in on our show and be part of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And so for me, it's a bit like, it's part of my job to be on social media. It is a job. Like my friend Kim, one of my friend Kim Johnson also had a podcast, and she wrote something the other day on Facebook, and she said, if you're not one of those people that need social media to do your job, you won't understand what I'm talking about when I say that I'm quitting Twitter and I'm going to lose a lot of people, because that's where it's at, you know? So today's no difference. My friend is here today, and we are going to be talking about poetry, Miss Ellen, of all things. I know you haven't, you are a writer in some respect, and you also write your own songs. You're an artist. But Rose Angelina Baptista is here. And boy, what an extensive bio she has. She is a retired physician. She is also an activist. She is also an author. And in the second half of our show, she'll be talking with us. So if you don't mind, you could say hello to our audience or something, whatever, until we your turn.
Hello, everyone.
And she's shy.
My pleasure to be here.
And she's also part of the Space Ghost Writers Guild, which I am too as well. I mean, we all, I was a member, and then now, of course, I can't attend their meetings. It's always every other Saturday, and I'm not there. But we've had some special guests who were supposed to call in today, Elle, and because of the storm up north in Buffalo, New York, and other places, people are just, they can't. They have no internet, right? Yeah, and they have no heat.
Power.
And then we're watching what's going on with the water situation in Mississippi. A lot of people don't have water, so it's a boil advisory. A lot of things are going on right now in our world. But one of the things that caught my eye this Christmas season, you know, we're all saying that Jesus is the reason for the season. And I do believe that. I believe without faith, nothing is possible. But again, we all learn from, you know, life experience. We learn from each other. We learn from history. And those who don't learn from history, they're doomed to repeat bad mistakes, right? And so I'm just at the gym walking on Christmas Eve, and I saw that there were migrants dropped off outside the home of the vice president in Washington, D.C., in the freezing cold. And I started thinking, what on earth is happening? If this is the season to be empathetic and have compassion and have love for human beings, why would anyone drop off someone who's seeking a better opportunity, or maybe asylum, or running away from violence, or maybe they're running away from climate change or something? Why would any governor or any person direct a busload of people to be dropped off in front of the vice president's home to make a statement?
That makes no sense to me whatsoever.
Thank you, Ali, for jumping in here.
Because there are laws, and you can go to jail if you were to do that to a dog.
Yes.
You know, and now here are these precious human beings, and as much as there's a force that wants to talk about how every life is precious, that's good. Well, every life of a grown person is just as precious as any other.
Yeah.
I think it's very, very outrageous and extremely hypocritical.
It made me extremely sad to see that, because as an immigrant myself who was blessed to immigrate to the United States, I do know that immigrants add a lot to the flavor of the United States. They contribute a lot. And, you know, when you look at what's happening with the snowstorm, oftentimes the people on those trucks in the cold with the big fat coats on and the hats and the earmuffs, they're immigrants. A lot of immigrants are working right now, clearing our streets in Chicago, putting the salt in New York. And I see you're shaking your head, Rose, because it's the truth.
Well, and this stunt has not, this is not a Christmas Eve only stunt. This has been happening since April. That the governor, I believe it's Abbott and Ducey, I believe it is, two governors. They, again, reports from CNN say that they've bussed 15,000 people to Washington, New York, Chicago, and Philadelphia, and all immigrants, and all from that state. And once again, goes back to what you said, Sita, it's to make a statement because they don't agree with Biden's immigration policy.
Well,
so instead of
and it's not
protesting
even,
and not using people as pawns,
really,
it's not even President Biden's policy.
I'm just saying what CNN said.
They're human beings that are fleeing their countries, whether it's bad government, whether it's horrible foreign policy, whether it's wars that took place because one country builds weapons and sells to the other, or whether it's climate change, right? President after president after president, every 4 years we change hands with, you know, the presidency, if somebody didn't win the second time around, right? like Obama won the second time around. But the thing is, the immigrants doesn't stop coming. People don't stop having babies. People don't stop saying, well, I'm living really well, that's why I'm going to leave my country. So for those in politics who don't understand that politics is about making the life of people's life better, right? It's not about using your platform to create such havoc and chaos and drop people off in the freezing cold. Like Ali said, we would be in trouble if we did that to a pet, right?
Right, and the issue is not so much about the policy, the way that it is that we need to make a policy to make immigration, legal immigration, easier. Because as your family, you know, the stories that I've heard about your family immigrating over to the United States as well, Sita, and I'm sure, Dr. Rose, you've probably got some stories as well. The immigration process is not easy. It's probably not supposed to be easy.
Well, these were not.
But the travel of the availability for people to have the the common sense and the knowledge of how to do it.
Yeah.
So that way we make this a whole lot easier.
Well, the D.C. community has been very welcoming because apparently they were tipped off by some volunteers in Texas that this was going to happen. But the people who are coming, they're not even the people that have filled out a form and waiting like right. we did, right? These are asylum seekers. These are people from Cuba, Ecuador, Nicaragua, Venezuela, Peru, Colombia. And according to the people on the buses, the busloads of people, they were here at the border because they thought they would have a chance. The bottom line is this: nobody's saying if you don't qualify for asylum that you're going to be allowed to stay. There's people hide and say, yeah, they come through the airplanes and they stay. They come through ships and they stay. But this circumstances is different because look at the weather. Would you take a little baby and come in this kind of weather? So you have to, so I often say that what people should say is, go and talk with these immigrants and ask them, why did you take such a chance? And I mean, on Christmas Eve, when everybody is praying in a church or a temple or a synagogue and talking about baby Jesus being in the manger and Mother Mary and Joseph doting over this child with no heat, no food, then you have the kings, the three kings, right, who comes to bring presents. We all grew up on this story of giving and being kind, and Christmas is not about commercials and, you know, advertisers and toys and stuff. They say Christmas is about the children, but the adults who are freezing in the cold, they were once children too. So how do you differentiate between what is right and wrong?
Well, they dropped them off in t-shirts in sub-freezing weather. You know, that's the bad part too, is that they didn't even take into consideration that fact that they were not clothed to be able to be left out in freezing cold like that. It's just like Allie said, it goes back to the same thing. If we treated our animals like this, we'd be in jail.
So Allie, and this is totally extremely inhumane, right? So yep. How do we get this across to the people that say blatantly, well, they should come legally? Well, if they could come legally, they would have come legally, they would have applied legally, have a certificate of good character and somebody to sponsor them, and they would, you and I know, Rose, how difficult it is, right, to come legally as it is. So, Allie, what do you say to people that say, well, they should have come legally?
Well, if it's different if you decided that you want to immigrate to United States. These are people that, you know, that are the ones that we're saying are immigrants. They're seeking asylum. It's like all of the displaced people in Ukraine needing to find places to be, and because where they were is being bombed out. So where these people are coming from is, in an essence, may not be an actual bomb, but it's certainly a disarray, horrible, my child will die if I stay here, I've got to go someplace else, and this is the only option. So it's a totally different thing. There's no legal or illegal about it at that point,
yeah,
because they're racing and running for their lives.
Right, and I agree with President Biden. You know, the White House put out a statement and said, it's cruel, dangerous, and a very shameful stunt.
That's an excellent word.
That word, yep. Shameful, really applies to so many people that we saw this past year, how they treated other people. I don't understand how you could go to church on Sunday or temple or synagogue, and on Monday you're like a rattlesnake looking to hurt someone.
Yep.
It's so unfair. I mean, my Christmas was really going very well until I sat down and I was pondering about this, and I'm like, oh my God, I went outside just to pick something up in the yard and I was freezing, and my mind just went on those people, and how would I feel if someone did that to me? It would make you feel less of a human being, and none of us should make people feel like that, you know. And so I said to myself that I would open the show today with this dialogue from all of us about why this incessant need to constantly prove that immigrants, especially from Latin America, that their lives don't count. I mean, like Ali brought up a good point with the Ukraine people. They went to Poland, they went to England, they went to Europe, different places. People opened their doors to them because their country was being bombed. And if those same people came here, a lot of people would welcome them with open arms. They would say, well, they're people that are fleeing wars. What's the difference with them and the people coming from Latin America?
Well, and the other part, too, is that this has been going on, like you had said, this has been going on for decades.
Yeah.
This isn't just the Biden administration. This has been going on for a very long time. And the fact that one of the smartest countries in the world, the United States, who prides themselves on being the open arms and the Statue of Liberty, we haven't figured this out yet. And we haven't figured out a better process for everybody. It's not about, you know, it's, again, using people as pawns, in my mind, illegally, like dropping them off and being that inhumane. It's just crazy that over 40 years we haven't figured out how to accept people better.
Well, and we won't. And we won't, because where you are born should not determine how you should live, where you should live, and if you should live or die. Where you are born should not determine that. Where you are born is just a place that your parents met, and we all know where babies come from, and you are born. And we have a pediatrician here who can speak to that. So let's go around the room and ask each other, what are some of the root causes why people flee? And Rose, I'll start with you, because you can join into this conversation. They said that the reason why people flee their countries, there are root causes. There are things that are happening in their life once they're born and they have common sense and they know what's heat and cold and right and wrong. People know that something is wrong. What do you think is one of the reasons that people flee?
I think better opportunity. They have a better opportunity to do the things that they are skilled to be recognized. I think this would be one reason.
Yes. And Allie, what do you give? You know, do you have any ideas in why people flee?
Life and death. Mm-hmm. You know, if I'm a mom and I've got an infant, and here I am, and people, and I don't have any place to sleep. I can't find food for my little one. All of that is your parental protective coat goes on, and you've got to. I'm braving anything to save my family.
Yeah. And Elle, I'm sure you have a something in your head.
Well, one of the things is that when you travel, you realize how blessed in the United States that we are. And I can only imagine what it's like growing up in another country and always thinking about, when I grow up, I get to go to the United States. When I grow up, I get to. And it kind of squashes not just the American dream, but children's dreams too, especially those that kind of, for lack of a better word, idolize the United States and idolize the freedoms that we have and idolize the opportunity. Just a quick story. A friend of mine, her daughter is over in Italy as a exchange student.
Mm-hmm.
And she said that she was just so happy to be back home where there had water pressure and they didn't have to wait 2 days to get water in some cases because there were water days that they could get. And, so, you know, certain right, not necessarily rights, but certain comforts of home that you realize that other countries don't have. And, you know, much to what Rose had said, an opportunity to have a better life is just such a huge wish for people.
Well, I grew up with that water truck where we would get water like Tuesdays and Thursdays, drinking water. And the rest of the time, we had rainwater. And you're right, you know, people take for granted the freedoms that we have in the United States. People who are born in this country don't realize how lucky they are to be born here. Because a lot of people come because it's about economic insecurity. They don't have a way of making money in their countries to live. And of course, security, right? And then we all talk about respect for human rights. We have the United Nations right here in New York. But then you hear stories about girls in Afghanistan that can't go to school. Women can't go to school or they can't go to universities. And you tell me which woman wouldn't try to escape a country that where they cannot read or write. And if they come to the border and then you say to them, go in front of the vice president's house without a coat because you're illegal. It's just wrong. So I think if they ask themselves why people are coming and look at the root causes why that's happening, I think all the politicians might become a little more empathetic and maybe have some compassion. It's not about a photo op and putting on a suit and a tie and saying, rah, 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 we're going to send you out of Texas because we have too many people here. It's about finding out why the people are fleeing. A lot of those countries, they don't believe in a woman's right to choose. So when you become pregnant and you have child after child after child and you don't have a home to live in and you don't have a job and you don't have a way of making money to take care of these kids, you want to come to the U.S. and do whatever it takes to raise your family. So a lot of it too is a lack of education in those countries as well, especially sexual education, comprehensive sex education. I think our doctor could jump in here if you want to. But education in Latin American countries.
Definitely.
I mean, I've had this conversation with my friends who are conservative as well and do support their pro-life. And they'll say, you know what, it is education. Because young people go out there and procreate without thinking. And then everybody says, well, maybe they should put them up for adoption. In those countries, we don't have the same process like we do here.
Right. Which, and I think any country is not an easy process. Experiencing that.
No,
as well.
It's
so it's not an easy process.
I mean,
once again, you know, opportunities for legislation, opportunities for activists to make changes in those areas of us, of our government, of our, you know, compassion. It gives us the ability to be able to be compassionate.
Right. And then, you know, we have to think about it too. In the United States, thank God that we're here and we're able to have a voice and be reasonable with our voice and be respectful, especially here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. We've always been respectful with our voices and how we get across our points. But in some of those countries, people are fleeing the combating sexual violence, gender-based violence, domestic violence, financial insecurity to a point where people are prisoners. So when you look at that and then you look at all the criminal gangs, the extortions, what you ask yourself, what can we do as human beings before we leave the planet to try to make the earth a better place? And I'll be honest, people in some of those countries live very well. The rich live very well. Some of those countries don't have a middle class. It's the poor. I mean, no. My mother used to say, nobody flees something that's good. They don't flee a good marriage. They don't flee a good job. They don't flee a good country. And they certainly don't flee a house that has lights, water, telephone, and food. Right? So not everyone is fleeing to the United States. A lot of people live very well outside of the United States. The ones who are fleeing are the ones who don't have an opportunity in their own land. Because I know plenty of people that live in England and Nicaragua and Venezuela, and they're happy there. You know, so I think when you have conversations with people and you ask some of them, well, why did you return to your country of birth? They'll tell you the pros and cons of living here and why they went back.
And I would add, too, that there's not a whole lot of people that were born in the United States that are fleeing to other countries.
No.
So if you can kind of look at it that way,
yes.
There's not a whole lot of an immigration problem of the U.S. getting into other countries. So that has to say something as
right.
well.
And I think our role as human beings here, especially on our show, we try to use for 13 years on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, we have always had guests and conversations about promoting respect for human beings, for human rights, for labor rights, and for people to have a voice, a freedom of speech. I watch what's happening in places like Iran, with people trying to speak to the government about the headscarf and why people should wear a headscarf or why they shouldn't. And the sad thing is that, you know, we don't have that issue here in the United States. You know, we don't have that problem here in the U.S.
We have saggy pants in the United States.
Well, yeah. I think we all have to be extremely careful because there are politicians who are trying to take away a woman's right to choose. There are people who are so gung-ho about fetal tissue before a human being is born that they have taken away the rights from people who are already born. And I think this is an area where Ali always comes in very strong. You could jump in right there. I mean, if we're not careful, we could lose that as well.
Well, it's amazing with some of the conversations that I've heard just on the news with regard to what our politicians do and don't know about the medical side of where babies come from,
mm-hmm.
when are they alive, all of those things. And they say, well, you know, you can't be raped if you decide you don't want to be raped. And it's like, what?
Yeah.
So there's a passel of ignorance there.
Yes.
And they're just fine because they want to get off the stage and stop speaking.
Well, you know, you think about what's going on this week in the United States. First, we have we watch the immigrants being dropped off in front of the VP's home. And all of us with a heart were worried about how are these people going to keep warm and have a place to sleep and take care of their children, and most importantly, treat them like human beings. Then you watch what's going on with the flight cancellations because of climate change. And, you know, we are tribal people. The people who are stranded in the airport, they need a place to sleep too. They need food. They need functioning toilets. Who do you think is cleaning up the airport? A lot of them are immigrants too. So when we take care of each other, it comes back to us tenfold. I've been to so many airports, and I always wonder, as soon as the planes land, guess who comes in to take care of them? A lot of immigrants. You see them, and I always say, bless them, because of them, we're able to fly. But if we don't take care of people when they come into our country, how are they going to give back to us and take care of us? You look at Orlando, and you look at Chicago and Buffalo and all the places that are snowed in. It is tribal. Police and firemen, they're going house to house to give people blankets and food and water. So why can't we do that for everyone? Why do we have to be so mean and hateful and spiteful because someone is not legally in the country? None of us are advocates for people to come in illegally. We're just saying it's Christmas time. Put your money where your mouth is. And if you believe it's the reason for the season is the Christ, then act like it. Right?
Exactly.
And I know, I mean, it's just one of those things that I feel like we would be hypocrites on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends if we didn't speak out on issues that are near and dear, not just to us, but to human beings, to mankind. What's the use of having a voice and having a forum to use a voice and not saying what you think is in your heart that would make the world a better place? Right? Because we all feel like year-round, we wake up every day and we're so grateful for health and strength and our breath. And if we don't use that breath that God gave us to try to make the world a better place and learn from our mistakes and learn to forgive and learn to have faith and learn to have family and share our food and our drinks with others, what's the use of being here, right?
With that, we send up 3 rockets a week, it seems like, the last couple. We could figure this out. As the United States, there's a lot of smart people that can figure this out. But we do have to take a quick commercial break.
Well, 1 minute. Not just the United States, but we also have people right now, the DACA recipients, the people who are waiting to become citizens in the United States, that their life is hanging in the limbo. And this Christmas season, we had a lot of those people who were fearful of being deported from the United States. Can we figure it out? Yes. The only way to figure it out is to actually, there are over 200, there are hundreds of thousands of people waiting right now to see what's going to happen with immigration reform. They have been in limbo since the Obama administration to see if these DACA recipients can stay in the United States legally. And I see you're shaking your head. And they can get the chance to go to college. A lot of people have been dropped because no one will give them a loan. So, I mean, Can smarter people make a difference? Yes. How can they make a difference? By actually speaking with the immigrants and sharing their stories and saying, hey, what happened? Because I don't see any way out of this. We all talk about immigration reform, and we all talk about comprehensive immigration reform. Nothing can happen unless people understand that we live in a world that's service-oriented. And you need me, and I need you. Otherwise, it can't work. So, and with that, I think we can go to commercial break, and we can come back with our friend Dr. Rose and talk about poems.
Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. The delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County and Central Florida. Super Savings Sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at Cloud 9. That's Cloud number 9, furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud 9
when you
Mattress
need medical care,
and Furniture.
Need it fast. MedFast Urgent Care is faster and less expensive than emergency rooms.
MedFast is open 7 days a week, now with 13 locations, including one in Volusia County. With so many MedFast Urgent Care centers, there is a MedFast near you. MedFast offers top quality care that is close by, and the number is easy to remember. That is 321-MEDFAST. Just call 321-MEDFAST. No one wants to wait in an emergency room for hours and get even sicker when you get the high bill. What you want is medical care fast. That's why you call MedFast, where most patients are seen and treated in less than an hour. So when you need medical care fast, call 321-MEDFAST.
Are you longing for a taste MedFast of Louisiana? Lizette's Cajun Bistro is the place to be. They offer Cajun and Creole staples as well as American, vegan, and vegetarian options. The restaurant is located at 2447 North Wickham Road, Unit 146. All menu items are prepared daily from scratch and made to order. Dine-in or takeout as well as outside seating. Live music on selected weekends. So the next time you have a taste for Louisiana, stop by Lizette's Cajun Bistro. 2447 North
Wickham
Road.
Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000, or visit them on the web at DixieCrossroads.com.
This
is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. Choctaw Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With three locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County, contact Jotkoff Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345. Located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne, that's Jotkoff Financial Group. On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff, that's JOTKOFF.com. Call the professionals at
There's something special
Financial
about the
Group
place
today.
We call home. It's the place we live our lives, spend time with family and friends, and make our own. At St. Francis Reflections Hospice, we consider it a privilege to care for you wherever your home may be. We put our hands, hearts, and skills into providing high-quality hospice care in your home. To learn more about how we reflect life, love, and compassion, visit www.reflectionslsc.org.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in Cocoa, Florida. We are heard on AM 1510, WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and on the World Wide Web.
That's right, all over the World Wide Web on Facebook, under Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, and also on our website, SitaMediaInc.com. You can find all of our shows and 1510 WWBC. If you're hearing us right now, you're probably listening to us live, but you can also do that on any listening device, 1510WWBC.com. Just hit that listen live button.
You know, Ellen, today was a day when a person named Angelina was supposed to come on our show. I was supposed to have someone call in from South Africa to speak about the film Angelina. And the director-producer is out skiing. And so she sent me an email that she was going to try to have Angelina call in, but Angelina was also unavailable. And then I decided to have somebody call in from Washington, D.C. to speak about the other subject that we just talked about, the immigrants and all that. And isn't it ironic that the person sitting next to me is Rose Angelina Baptista?
You were supposed to have an Angelina on today.
I was supposed to have an Angelina on today. It's amazing. So Rose Angelina Baptista is a Brazilian-American writer based in Central Florida. She's a former international medical school graduate who, inspired by Elizabeth Bishop and Laura Whiting, opted for a literary path. And I am going to have Rose tell our listeners a little bit about herself before we jump into something that I never thought we would do on the show. Of course, we've had authors and writers, but we really haven't had a poet as yet, or poems. Yeah. And so this is the first. Since the new year, we might be able to make a poem about the new year. So welcome to our show. Thanks for taking the time to come and sit with Ellen O'Neill and Allie Tambor and myself and Danny Whiting and have fun on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
Thank you for having me.
So you went to school, you went to medical school in Brazil?
Yes.
And practiced medicine for a while?
25 years.
And she doesn't look like a day over 25.
We were just saying, as soon as she said she was practicing medicine for 25 years, we said, no way.
Yeah. So no I want way. You to feel comfortable on our show, because our show is actually like the like us sitting in a living room and having coffee without actual drinking the coffee right now. So it's kind of like an unscripted, fun, educational, very valuable program. We try to talk about things that are going on around the world, you know, kitchen table topics, and things that we think we can make a difference with through our activism and our voice. So you have made a difference with your books. You've written some books. You help people and collaborate with them. And one of the things you like, Miss Rose Angelina Baptista, are poems. And I know there's three types of poems, so let's talk about that. Three types of poems?
I think we should just talk about the Space Coast Writers Guild. How did you get involved, Miss Rose, in the Space Coast Writers Guild?
In fact, it was 2018, and I watched the television news about Parkland mass shooting, and there was a mother desperate asking to the audience what we can do about it. I decided to start to write poetry.
Out of, and again, out of anguish, you know, out of depression, those kinds of things, it's amazing how poetry speaks to not just the writer, but so many other people.
Out of tragedy. Well, that goes right along with the three types, the characteristics of poems: the imaginative, creative, descriptive, and vivid language. So when we watched the Parkland shooting, or we watched what happened in Aurora, we saw it with our eyes, and then you were able to put it into words.
I think that emotionally triggered inside my heart a kind of response to this kind of violence in the school. And that's why I started to organize the poetry committee. I became a member of Space Coast Writers Guild, and nowadays we are 8 members.
And all volunteers, right?
It's a volunteer work, 100%. And hopefully we'll have some grants the next year to start to work with the school. We have some projects. And then I will fulfill the aspiration that brought me inside this field.
Yeah. So do you think people are more concerned now about poetry like they did in the past?
Definitely. There's a kind of fever around poetry, not only in the United States, I think it's globally. And the pandemics was an important moment that brought people to understand the importance of writing and sharing poetry as a sort of solace, the gifts of poetry itself, inspiration, a sense of belonging, and so
expressive, and it's a way to express, to communicate. So what would you say in your words is poetry? Because Ellen is also I guess you have to call a poet, because she writes songs, and that's a way of expressing how you feel. How do you feel about poetry? What is it exactly?
I think in general, poetry is the emotional voice behind our experience. Sometimes it has glimpses of barren sights. Poetry uses aesthetics and language to reach the pleasure of the text. Its language needs to have music for that effect. Its words need to trigger imagination and sensorial appeal simultaneously. Its form needs to flow as a river into the sea.
That's beautiful.
I know. She says it.
Yeah, exactly.
So, Ellen, you're a poet in some ways. What satisfaction do you get out of poetry writing?
I think for me, I am a type of poet that I have kind of a stream of consciousness where I just write. It doesn't necessarily have to rhyme or have any type of rhythmic to it. And then all of a sudden I go back and read it after and I realize that those are my feelings, like at that moment. Or so it's very cathartic for me and very eye-opening when I look back at it and say, wow, I was really upset that day, or wow, I was really happy that day. Or and I can
so
really
you can express your feelings.
Well, you can reconnect yes. with those moments. It's really reconnecting with memories and moments. And when I sing, because of course we have the band, so when I sing songs, I only pick songs that have a meaning to me. And I can think of a story or I can think of something that connected it. And it makes it almost timeless that you, it's not just timeless for me, but the people that know the stories behind some of the songs or behind some of the poetry, it makes it timeless for them as well.
Yeah.
And so when we talk about leaving legacies, mine are going to be my songs, yours is going to be the curry chicken.
Yeah.
That's the way that's going to go.
So Dr. Rose Baptista is here. We're talking with her. She's part of the Space Coast Writers Guild as well as the genius behind two awards that they're working on right now for poet and people who win contests with poetry. Where is the grace and the power of poetry? Where can it be found?
Its power comes from a paradox. It makes nothing happen, as Odin points out. Yet poetry is treasured for immemorial times by human hearts because it makes people feel good. Poetry supports sanity because it is a great possibility for the emotional self, the basis of our existence. Poetry's grace is not easy to attain because the muse can be stingy with poets, quoting Luis Borges. But the craft can be learned.
It can. And you know, now's a good time because I know that Rose had brought some samples of poetry. So I know that there's a few in particular that you wanted to read, real quick ones, just to give people an idea of what it's like, not always to be at the Space Coast Writers Guild, but at least to be part of it.
I want to start with a small verse from Ada Limón, the first Latin American poet laureate. Just now, I felt like I wanted to be alone for a long time in a folding chair on the lawn with all my private agonies. But then I saw you.
Oh, that's beautiful. You know, when I talk about poetry, I think about one person, Shakespeare.
Yes.
And you had mentioned that before.
Yes.
He was able to break all the rules while understanding the language that he used.
Yes, and hidden stuff within it too, so that people have been interpreting for hundreds of years with his work. I found it difficult as a kid to learn it and read it, but if you take moments in your life as you mature and try it again, and then those poems can mean so much more.
And we all remember being children, right, and having to read a poem in front of the class.
Oh.
And I still remember some of the children who would recite a poem, and they would have such expressions on their faces, and they would use their hands, and they would use their body language, and you're nodding to that. But I don't know if we do that anymore in the United States or around the world, but I think it was a beautiful way of self-expression and communication, because poetry also taught a lot of us that we could deepen the understanding of the language that we speak by writing poetry. And I see you're nodding your head, Rose. You want to add to that? Do you know of anybody that stands up and actually read a poem and use their hands and eyes and everything else to let the audience know this is what it's about?
Yes, we call poetry slams. People really recite and with all the expressions. It's really beautiful field of poetry.
Well, honestly, when we go back and listen to this recording, there's a difference in your voice now and when you read that poem too. So people can hear the expression of meaningful moments in that poem.
Well, it's like Shakespeare. He started his career as an actor and as a playwright. And he wrote poetry, and the whole world still talks about him now. Do you have another poem that you want to read for us, a short one?
Yes.
Because you do. Like Ellen said, she comes alive when she reads her poems.
I want to read this poem. It was published in our Reflections, and one of our poetry anthologies. The title is Mischievous Heart. My questioning has reached its end. I've learned to confront omniscience, that primal elemental neutrality. Everything else now rendered trivial, even the air. Those old struggles have nothing to do with me. Our paths are not longer the same.
Wow. So would you say that writing poetry helps you to create a deeper, better art? Do you feel like it's a spiritual thing for you to write poetry?
It's a way to express your feelings, emotions, always connected to some memory in the past, or even one experience of the present moment based in your bare insight.
Yeah. I think when you start writing poetry, and it is an art form, it's a bit of an addiction too, because people become addicted now. Everything they see good and bad, or they see a way of, like, I know my husband will talk about Rumi every once in a while, and he was telling me about this poem that Rumi had written about a leaf, like, be careful where you put your feet, because you could be stepping on this leaf, which could be as gentle as a woman's eyelids. And it makes so much sense, because everything is so fragile. Mm-hmm. I think he was comparing this leaf to the face of a person and how fragile it is, and be careful where you step, because you're stepping on the beauty of someone. And I never could understand all this stuff because I'm too busy in running around. But the more you look into people like Williams, W. Woodsworth, or Rumi, you learn a lot. Does the Space Coast Writers Guild talk about poems like those? Like Rumi? He's one of the world's greatest poets.
Yes. Our group is kind of starting this movement. And we have in our programs some classes during the 2023 calendar, and the World Poetry Day in March, for instance, is when we always celebrate with an international poet like Rumi, Luis Camões, and other ones.
Yes. So can you talk a little bit about your background for us and tell us, like, how did you fall into this? Because to go from medicine to poetry, that's a little bit different. Most people would volunteer. Well, you do volunteer in medical stuff as well. But you took it's a different turn, almost.
Well, my ancestors were landless peasants, and two of my uncles were poets. I had one high school teacher, Dirce Alvarenga Foss, who nurtured the love of poetry in my heart. Through her, I came to know the greatest poets of the Luso world, Luiz Vaz de Camões, Cassiano Ricardo, Manuel Bandeira, Cecília Meirelles. And when I retired as a physician in 2007, I started to read American poetry, the work of Wallace Stevens, Laura Riding, Elizabeth Bishop, Richard Wilbur. All served as inspirations to me. I struggled with the conceptual world between two different languages, searching again and again through those aesthetic eccentricities, poetry, visual arts, and music, trying to find metaphors to describe the indescribable. I write because there is a cleft in the cave of our human hearts, and only through that fissure can we transcend suffering.
Wow. So do you feel like poetry makes you reevaluate and evaluate words, and it's a way of manipulating language as well? Like, yes. You can get away with using certain words and manipulating the words in poetry that you probably can't get away with in real life.
That's true.
I remember as in grade school, did everybody have a poetry class or some type of literature class that they asked you to write poetry? I remember that was my introduction, if you will, to Roget's thesaurus.
Oh, yeah.
Because I would try and find, what's the word that rhymes with whatever other word? And my vocabulary, just because of that class, now obviously it was English Lit or whatever it happened to be at the time, but whatever that class was that taught me the poetry piece, I think my vocabulary jumped, I would venture to say 25%, because it goes back to those trying to find those feeling words,
right,
first
right,
of all,
right, right.
And then the rhyming part on top of it. So it was like such a great structure.
Also, poems act as a filter. It helps us to get things out, like the guts of the matter of what you want to write about. Some people write poems about the environment. Some people write poems about women's rights. Some people notice what's happening with a certain government in a certain part of the world, and they can't address the government itself, but they can address the situation through poetry, like what's happening in Iran, for example. Someone could look at the people on the border who are coming for a better life and write a poetry about. So do you think poetry gives us a way to communicate that normally we would not be able to communicate?
Definitely. There are several different kinds to write poetry. There are epic poetry, lyric poetry. There are satirical poetry. And the themes also. An infinite variety of themes that you can explore. Always kind of circumspection around the sentiments and the feelings of that particular experience.
Right. And they take, poems can convey the same message in a quicker way because you're writing it quickly versus if you want to write a book. But there's some poems I understand that people ponder about the words and it takes them a very long time to write that poem. I mean, we see a poem and it's written out short, right? But is it true that some people ponder over that poem and take a long time to write it?
Yes.
It's hard to believe, right?
A good poem generally takes time to, you know, to go through the form, the idea, the word choices, the song it can sing, and some people go for more than 50 drafts to come to one poem. So it is a kind of a labor of love.
Right. If you think about rap music too, even though a lot of people are not real familiar with it and maybe hear it in the bad sense in a lot of ways, but rap music is
expressing something.
Expressing what it's like in a neighborhood, what it's like in a church, what it's like in a, and whatever it happens to be. And if you take the time to really read through the lyrics, and, you know, if there's bad words or whatever, kind of skip those because the message of the story is amazing. Goes back to that song that you said. And I think that rap producers or the people that are producing rap music are that they hear that song in their head as they're going through it. There's a rhythm to it. There's a style to it automatically.
Right. Well, you know, there are some countries where poems are banned too because the words of poems are supposed to make you feel something. And so some people don't want you to feel whatever the writer is trying to convey because it does help you to get your feelings out.
Sometimes it's just the struggle,
right,
that they're trying to get out too. So it's like how hard is it occasionally when you'd like to send a card to someone and you want to put some sort of sentiment in it yourself? Those words don't come easy.
Right.
And finding the right ones that are smooth and gentle but the right words, and back to the Roget's again, you know, to exquisitely or as exquisitely as you can as just a, you know, lay person to be able to put a card sentiment together.
I know, even Hallmark, they have a lot of poetries there.
Yeah.
So for our listening audience, we're speaking with Rose Angelina Baptista. She's the assistant chair of the Poetry Division for the Space Coast Writers Guild here in Brevard County, Florida, and we're speaking about poems. So, Rose, with the remaining time we have, can you read a short bilingual poem?
Yes. I will read a poem about Assam tea gardens. Dance in their hands, oh gold-tipped leaves. Dance to their malted eyes. Bloom supple between their glossy lips. Thrice harvested, full-bodied and wrapped in green. Now their lustrous cheeks sprout from clay valleys, heads a double defense of the prize basket, and the clouds their Saturnine spouses.
Wow. I think I'm going to look at poetry differently after today, because I had buried all the feelings about poetry way back when I left school at the age of 18. But you look at the singers, like, you know, the singers we've had on our show and the artists that we have on our show, they all write to convey a message, right? Mm-hmm. So if somebody wanted to join the Space Coast Writers Guild or part of the poetry contest and or whatever you're doing, give us your phone number, address, email, however, to contact you.
I would ask that everybody could access the Google Space Coast Writers Guild and check our website, check our poetry authors, and just write to us. We have the email over there.
And before you go off air, we have 1 minute. Tell us the names of the two awards that you are working on actively so that people who do become poets can win one.
Yes. So the Edmund Schelling's Poetry Award is the first award of poetry in Brevard. So if you are writing poetry, submit to us once our poetry anthology opens the call for submission.
And your books can be found where?
Our poems you can find in our Space Coast Writers Guild Poetry Anthology, Reflections, Volume 1, that was published last year, and Horizons, the second volume, published this year.
And Rose is also published in Brown University Library for her poem of Colitia de Cinco Poemas.
Yes, Cinco Poemas. They were recently published by Gavia Brown, Bilingual Journal of Brazilian and American Literary Studies. And you can read 5 poems there in Portuguese.
It's awesome. Thank you so much for joining us today. And Sita, what a robust discussion we had today about immigration. You know, really it's about immigration activism at this point, right? I think. Allie, thank you so much for being here.
You got
Happy
it.
New Year, everyone. Happy birthday, Sita Begui. Ooh, yes. On December 30th.
I don't Ooh. Even feel 59.
Yeah, you look beautiful. Tune in next week for another great edition of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Happy everything, everybody.